BizNews turns 11 years old on Sunday. Last year, because it was our 10th anniversary, we had a special birthday celebration with a conference in Hermanus to test out, to a large degree, what we did in March this year at BNC 6. It worked so well that we will be having our first investment conference, also in Hermanus, on the 12th of September. But this year, for our 11th birthday, and because this is the 1st of August, we are bringing you NewsWrap. It's a weekly summary of developments of the past few days that were most relevant for the community that we serve. This week, we are not covering two of the big stories of the moment, the attack by the Israeli of some of the Hamas leaders. Is a little early for us to get some video coverage of, but we do have a lot of coverage on the website. It's a concerning situation, and Andrew England, who used to be the Financial Times' South African correspondent, now he's looking after the Middle East operation, writes that we are getting close to another Middle Eastern all-out war. That piece is on BizNews there for you to read. And if you've been following BizNews.com lately, you will know that there is a lot of discussion, and certainly there's been a lot of attention given to the series of essays written by Richard Wilkinson about the Pretoria High School for Girls. It's a little outside of our sweet spot, but it's a very important story and one that you can read all about there. In essence, 12 young girls, some of them prefects, were members of a WhatsApp group. They have been accused of using racist language in that group. And all of the girls who were members of it, those who spoke about it and those who didn't, in other words, who were just following it, have been suspended. It's only a few weeks to go until the prelim results, prelim examinations, and then, of course, the matric exams. So there's a lot of unhappiness about it. But particularly because the Gauteng Education Department has taken this very seriously. They've got involved. There's been grandstanding. It's a heck of a story. We don't know which side is actually right or wrong, but it all boils down to what was in those WhatsApps. Richard Wilkinson says it was entirely innocent and not racist. Clearly, there are others who believe differently. But let's kick off NewsWrap with the other big story of the week. The arrest of 95 Libyans at a suspected secret military training camp in White River. That's in Mpumalanga, about 350 kilometers northeast of Johannesburg. My colleague Chris Steyn spoke to the leader of the United Independent Movement, Neil De Beer. She does so every Sunday. And Neil gives us an inside track into what's happening in the political environment. Let's have a look at part of that clip.
But I will give a feather to the cap, to the police, and to the entities that today they reacted and they were on site. But something's wrong.
Well, 95 Libyans were arrested. Where were they going to be deployed as security guards, Neil?
So you look at the video, people like myself that come from there, and you look at the training camp facility. Let's quickly discuss one thing. A security guard, which they say the 95 people were there for. They were there for security guard training. What the hell are the kinds of security premises these people are going to protect? Rubbish. So let me go through it. There is a place, and you can see the new minister, Mchulu, and the national commissioner, walking with a camera crew, and you can see there is what we call a live scenario setup. It is a S-shaped trench covered with sandbag leading up to an underground bunker. Now, I don't know what kind of training a security guard needs to defend a line of trench warfare and underground bunkers. So you can fool some of the time, but not all of the time. The kind of uniform, the kind of discussion. I saw them practicing house clearing. I saw them practicing shoot and move. this is not a normal security guard training, unless this security is being done in the middle of either Iraq, Iran, or Afghanistan. Rubbish. This was a camp, in my opinion, allegedly set up to train people for war. And that's that.
Extraordinary story, isn't it? And we got more information on the whole military training camps from another interview that Chris did. And here is a story that you just have to be following. Some years ago, a member of the South African Police Services decided that she would give across information to her superiors, and indeed went as far as the president's office to give over hard disks and other information about this kind of nefarious activity. Her name is Patricia Morgan Mashele. She also gave the information to the then Commissioner of Police, Becky Trele. Well, Patricia, for her troubles as being a whistleblower, was then given a lot of trumped up charges. She had to go off for 7 months into hiding, fearing for her life. And this week, it all came to a head. She went to court and was acquitted on all charges. Chris spoke with her about this in the week.
I was in hiding for almost 7 months. While I was in total hiding, where I could not show his because of those charges. Because as you can remember, there was a warrant of arrest issued against me and a red alert was issued against my name, meaning that I was one of the most wanted criminals in South Africa, or let me say internationally, because if there's a red alert, it means that you are wanted internationally. For all my trouble, I ended up losing my job. I ended up being arrested. I ended up in Lake Eins. And all they wanted was to see me either dead or in prison. The message that I have for other whistleblowers is, I always say to people that don't be derailed. If you know you do the right, stand by your convictions. I know you're going to stand alone. And it's cold. It's hard to stand alone. But stand by your convictions.
What a story. We're still there with Our Continent and another of the stories that Chris picked up this week. She really has been busy and the community is loving the videos that she's putting together. You can get them, by the way, on biznews.com on the YouTube channel. Was about the Great War of Africa. Now, many people might not have been following this that closely. We were terribly excited between 1998 and 2003 about our new democracy here in South Africa. But while things were going in the right direction here at last, after a long time of an undemocratic state, to the north, not very far away, there was a war which killed 5 million people, either in the fighting or through malnutrition, and displaced 7 million of them. This is known on the continent as the Great War of Africa, and it had its roots in the genocide in Rwanda in 1994, when the part of those allegedly committing the genocide left the country and went into the eastern part of DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo. The Rwandan forces have from time to time attacked those who had fled, and this has escalated into a conflict situation that brought the Great War of Africa, and thereafter needed 14,000 peacekeepers from the United Nations. Well, the Southern African Development Community, in its wisdom, decided that it would do a better job of protecting people in Rwanda. The UN peacekeepers are leaving, and amongst the forces who've gone in there are South Africans. In fact, it's South Africans, Tanzanians, and Malawian troops that are trying to keep the peace against impossible odds. Chris spoke to retired Colonel Wyatt about the situation, and he had some pretty scathing things to say about our troops, who, by the way, a number have died already and questioned exactly what the preparations had been. And in his opinion, they've been sent there on a mission impossible.
They're like lambs sent to the slaughter. They're being sent there with insufficient resources, improper medevac, no air support, insufficient logistics. The South African government has to pay contractors to fly Russian aircraft to send resources up there. It's something that South Africa should not be involved in, but it's all part of the egotistical foreign policy of the African National Congress, all started by Nelson Mandela, you know, interfering in other African countries' business. It's not a good look. It's not a good thing. And lives are being wasted unnecessarily, not just South African lives, but civilian lives there, because the South Africans have been accused of targeting civilians in one of the attacks about 30 kilometers from Goma earlier this year. It's a real mess, and I don't see what they get out of it. Well, arguably, there's been a war with Rwanda and the DRC since the 1990s. Kagame has been supporting rebels in the Eastern Congo for decades and getting away with it.
Quite a story, and one that here in South Africa, we haven't really been on top of. You can be sure that at BizNews, we'll be giving you all of that news as we go forward. Another unfortunate story, I suppose, is the way to put it, is the, in the past week, a decision by Total, the French multinational oil company, to pull out of the deep water oil and gas discoveries in the Southern Cape Coast. They are called, the one is called Brulpadda and the other one Leipert. And these were heralded as fantastic finds. In fact, they are the biggest finds ever for South Africa, but not quite big enough to justify a on-site conversion of the gas into GTL or gas to liquid. As a consequence, Total was going to need to have an offtake agreement with someone on the Cape Coast. And because of the engagement that it had with Petro SA being so dysfunctional, it was unable to do that. The upshot about all of this is that this week, Total withdrew from an 80 billion rand project. It has already spent about 8 billion rand on the exploration, but decided that it wasn't going to throw good money after bad. It couldn't get a deal together with an offtake from Petro SA, which, by the way, needs the gas for the Mosgas operation. And as a result of that, I got hold of the Shadow Minister of Minerals and Petroleum, James Lorimer, who has been giving us a lot of insight into the South African gas story. We got fantastic reserves up on the west coast near the Namibian border. And potentially this is where Total is going to be refocusing its attention. But let's hear what James had to say about the loss to South Africa of the pulling out from the Southern Cape fields by Total.
So the departure of Total, maybe for us as taxpayers, can you give us an indication of, had they gone ahead with Brulpadda and Leipert, had there been no obstacles to the investment, how much investment would it have been? And what kind of tax revenues would South Africa have earned from a field of that size?
The total project was probably going to be worth $4 billion, of which they'd spent about 10%. So $400 million. So let's translate that yourself into Rand. That's a lot of money. Depending on who you listen to, they reckon that there was about 10 billion worth of tax revenues a year over the life of that project. That's not inconsiderable. And, you know, they're all this, the life was probably, I think in excess of 10 years. So that's, you know, it's a nice chunk of change. And then, you know, that's without all the things that go along with that, the jobs that they were expecting would be created. Simply the resource, the gas that we would have had to power that Gariqua plant, and if they'd built a gas-to-power plant in Mossel Bay, I mean, that would have been a lot cheaper than the diesel that they're using for the peaking plants at the moment. So huge savings there, plus possible other users of industrial users of gas in the Southern and Eastern Cape. So that's a huge loss to the economy.
I also asked James what would happen next, and he shared that a South African company, HCI, has got 10% of this project. So HCI's share price hasn't really reacted, which I found rather strange, because you would have thought that there would have been quite a bit of investor value that has now been lost. But presumably the share price has been under pressure for so long that it really hasn't made any difference. But James's thought was that HCI would now go out and try and find other partners, because the discoveries are there, the gas is there, it is 175 kilometers offshore, and it is in the Mozambican current, which is a 5 kilometer strong current that makes it difficult to work, but they have far worse currents in the North Sea, and they're pulling out a lot of oil and gas there. So that's the next installment in this saga. Of course, the resources haven't gone. The trouble is, it's going to be years now before a new project can actually bring them to fruition. That number of 10 billion rand in lost taxes every year times 10 years is where we got to our headline of 100 billion rand in tax revenues forgone because of PetroSA not welcoming Total into the country. They could surely have done so much better. But when cadres are deployed, you know what the consequence is. Well, somewhere that we have done pretty well on the continent and here in South Africa is in cell phones. And The Economist, which is our partner at BizNews, we are the only licensee of The Economist on the African continent, this week had a look at the artificial intelligence boom and did some extrapolation on whether or not Africa would benefit from it or be left behind. The idea was that Africa could indeed leapfrog as a result of AI, but that it would have to apply the lessons that were learned in the past, in particular from the cell phone industry. Let's have a listen to the part of the leader from The Economist, which has the most relevance on this topic.
The continent does not have enough data centers, the brick and mortar sites where cloud computing happens. The Netherlands, population 18 million, has more of these than all of Africa and its 1.5 billion people. As a result, data must cross half the world and back, leading to painful delays. If Africans are to do movie animation, run sophisticated weather forecasts, or train large language models with local content, they will need more computing capacity closer to home. To fix this, governments should learn from the mobile boom and cut red tape. Starlink, a satellite internet firm, could be a stopgap, but regulators have blocked it in at least 7 countries, including South Africa. Heavy taxes on data access drive up costs for consumers, discouraging them from using it and firms from investing in providing it. Governments could do much to help simply by getting out of the way. Development institutions, for their part, should be doing more to help finance this vital infrastructure because of its widespread benefits for growth and employment. The new digital revolution will create opportunities for Africa to catch up with rich countries. But if the continent lacks the right infrastructure, it will instead fall further behind.
Interesting that the point was made there about Starlink, which is banned in South Africa because the South African government demands that there is a 30% BEE allocation. Elon Musk says, no, thank you. Well, on to markets, and Elon Musk wasn't the happiest guy in the world after the market's reaction to the Tesla results. They knocked the share price down quite significantly. But there is a view that the great rotation is now starting to happen. In other words, big tech stocks have had a fantastic run, especially the Magnificent Seven, of which Elon's Tesla is one. But that their day in the sun is now drawing to a close, and that it's time for value stocks and for smaller cap shares to have their period of market appreciation. The Financial Times, which is another of our partners, of which we are also the only Africa licensee, put together this piece, which I'm sure you're going to find very interesting, on where big tech might be heading into the future.
U.S. investors are punishing companies more than usual when they miss the mark on earnings. We saw a sell-off last week in big tech stocks that dragged down the market across the board. And along with the pivot away from big tech stocks, investors are eyeing up smaller companies. Here to explain is the FT's Rob Armstrong.
The picture is really quite varied. So one stock that did terribly after its earnings was Tesla. And one has to say its earnings report was pretty dreary. Revenue is extremely slow in the car business. And Elon Musk and the other executives are keen to talk about robo-taxis and humanoid robots and software. But the market would have preferred probably to see them sell a few more cars. But what is interesting is that another big tech company that actually reported quite solid reports, Alphabet, the parent company of Google, actually got punished after reporting decent numbers that met expectations. And so there's a story here about very high expectations going into these earning reports.
Is this sell-off a sign that these stocks are maybe overvalued?
Well, certainly, however you measure the valuation of the very big tech stocks, they're about as expensive as most of them have ever been. And they've had an absolutely glorious multi-year run. So one interpretation of what's going on here is if you've been a big investor in these names, Meta, Apple, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, you've made a lot of money. And maybe now you're thinking it's been a good run. If things don't look as rosy as they once were, maybe it's time to put the money somewhere else.
So the place people seem to be putting their money is into small cap stocks.
Well, I think in a certain sense, it's a mirror image of what we've seen with big tech. Small stocks have had a terrible run over the last couple of years. They've become enticingly cheap, and it feels like an opportunity. Another important point about the small caps is they will benefit more than tech companies and big companies if interest rates do come down. They tend to have more debt. Their businesses are more economically sensitive. So if, as we expect, the Fed is tiptoeing towards a rate cut, if not this week, then in September, it might be a good time to be in small cap stocks, or that's what the market seems to be telling you.
What does this all mean for big tech going forward, Rob?
Well, it's a question of whether some other part of the stock market can take the leadership role that was held by, you know, what came to be called the Magnificent Seven, being a group of enormous U.S. tech companies for so long. So these stocks are enormous. They account for something like 25% of the S&P 500. If the index is to continue its great run, a lot of other stocks are going to have to step up if the big seven are just going sideways or, heaven help us, even falling.
Heaven help us, even falling. Well, that will certainly put a dent in many portfolios, including the BizNews model portfolio, which we heard this week over the last 10 years is one of only 10% that outperformed the world MSCI World Index and the S&P 500 Index. Well, that's good for you if you've been following that portfolio over the past 10 years. Something we have been following is the Corient report. Every month, just after the month end, I have a chat with David Bacher where we have a look at what happened for stocks in the previous 4 weeks or the previous month. Well, usually it takes him a couple of days to put it together, but just, I suppose, to help us with this show today, they brought out the Corient report today. And so we can take a little clip from the conversation that David and I had earlier, where you'll see that South Africa has been one of the outperformers of the moment and certainly in the month of July.
Breaking down into the different Olympic events. So this one you call the 100 meters. Explain exactly what we see on screen here.
We titled it 100 meters because it is only a month. So it is a bit of a dash in terms of investing and the long-term investment plan. But what we're seeing on the screen is the UK and South Africa winning the race. They were up over 4%, 4.5 and 4.9%, while the two bigger economies, America and China, were only slightly up. So it was a nice month for South African investors. In dollar terms, the currency also appreciated. So certainly if it was a race, South Africa and UK would be winning. And it's actually quite interesting to note that our market is actually quite similar to the UK in many drivers. Both markets have very large financial sectors, cyclical companies, and shares that are considered value shares, which you know, the whole value investing had a really good month. And both countries had recent elections, and both those elections illustrated political stability, which is obviously favored by the market. And hence, our market and the UK really outperformed global equities.
Well, to a large degree, you saw there that the South African equity market was up by over 4%. But it was across the board, bonds 4%, and also property was up by a similar amount, 4%. Those are big numbers. If you just multiply them by 12, on an annualized basis, it's almost 50%, so a big rebound. And what is interesting was that South African investors and global investors who follow the South African markets actually took a bit of a breather in June, waited until they could see the Government of National Unity settling down, and in July, gave it a big vote of confidence. So it's early days for the GNU, but at least we are seeing that there is cold cash coming in to support it. You get the feeling that every month that the Government of National Unity holds, every month that there's progress, you might see a little bit more of the foreign investment capital coming into South Africa. And I can tell you that is the biggest benefit that any of us could hope for, because as a developing country, South Africa needs capital to grow. And that means we need to pull in money from elsewhere in the world. And they'll only do that if they think they're going, first of all, their capital is going to be safe, but secondly, that they're going to get a good return on investment. And as the capital comes in, it creates jobs. That's what it's all about. Well, that's good news, but even better news is what's been going on at the Olympics. And tonight, Tatjana Smith, formerly Tatjana Schoenmaker, will be competing for a second gold medal. She's in the final for the 200 meters breaststroke. She's got a compatriot with her as well. So there are two South African girls in that race. And we have got Pieter Coetzee, who's in the backstroke final. So who knows? With a bit of luck, a little later this evening, this is Thursday, the 1st of August, we might see South Africa earning more medals to go along with the three that we have already. Tatjana, incidentally, up to this point anyway, has got 100% of South Africa's gold medals. Well, we got three medals and she's got one, only one is gold. And she had 66% of the total medals that South Africa won at the previous Olympics, where we only came back with three. Tatjana had the gold and the silver. Let's be pulling for her tonight. But ahead of the swimming, we did have a chat with Wayne Ridding, who is a expert on the sport. And this was the way that he explained the opportunities or the potential of our golden girl before she became, once again, the nation's favorite.
So is Tatjana going to be fast enough, because her entry time is into the 105.5 at the moment going into it? But I do believe that she's got the talent. It's not really the talent that is going to come through and that preparation. It's really the nerves that come with it and everything, because everybody that gets a lane in that final, there's a chance. So, you know, everybody wants it just as bad. So can that person come together in the final? That's what the big question is going to be. The 200 breaststroke for her, she's got more opposition than what she did have in 2021. So, you know, it's going to be a tough one for her. So that expectation, we should just calm it down a little bit and say, you know what, if you get a medal, that'll be great. And let's just hope that she can rise above that level. And she has the character. She's done the training. She is a professional swimmer. And I believe it's possible. It's just that the other people are also wanting it, and people mustn't forget that.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed, she does. Well, it is interesting that she won the gold in the 200 meters, which is the one that she's contesting, and she went one better in the 100 meters. Let's see. Well, this has been NewsWrap from the team at BizNews. Hope you enjoy it, and I hope you're going to join us again, 6 p.m., live on all of our social media channels next Thursday. Until then, I'm Alec Hogg. Cheerio.